Hello, listeners. Thank you for tuning in to Iris today. This is the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Monday, April 29th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Let's get started reading articles on the front page of the Courier. The first one is titled, UNI Closes Its Office of Diversity Inclusion. This was written by Vanessa Miller of the Gazette. Dateline Ames. The University of Northern Iowa is eliminating its Diversity, Inclusion, and Social Justice Office, quote, which has been and is an important part of the UNI experience for many of our students, President Mark Nook announced on Thursday. Quote, because this office has served many students on our campus, we are creating new frontline student-serving positions to expand our direct-to-student services for the entire UNI student population, Nook said. The news came in response to 10 directives the Board of Regents handed down in the fall to curtail diversity, equity, and inclusion spending and programming across its public universities. Presidents of all three campuses Thursday shared significant changes underway. Iowa State University also announced the permanent closure of its Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion office. Quote, we will eliminate essentially 5 positions, 2 positions that are currently filled, and 3 vacant positions, ISU President Wendy Winterstein said of the closure planned for July in response to the first regent directive to restructure central DEI offices to eliminate any functions not necessary for compliance and accreditation. Quote, at this time, we don't feel that we can meet Directive 1 without closing the Central Vice President for Diversity, Equity, Inclusion office, Winterstein said. Reporting the decision will save $789,000 to be redirected to, quote, university priorities. Quote, our staff have been given a 90-day notice, and they will work with the university HR through this process, Winterstein said, of the employees losing their jobs. Despite the significant changes, including at the University of Iowa, which also is cutting 5 DEI-associated positions, Regent David Barker said it might be too little too late, as lawmakers have codified their own DEI directives in a bill that's making its way to the governor's desk. Quote, it was 5 months ago that we put out directives, and we've been given no feedback and had no updates during that time, Barker said to the university presidents after they presented the work they've done to comply with the board's DEI orders. Quote, that meant that we were unable to update legislators as well, who had asked about progress. And I believe that that is the reason why Senate File 2435 was passed. Quote, so my first question is, are you getting prepared for Senate File 2435? Barker asked. Because that is broader in many ways than the directives, unquote. My read is different. SF 2435 uses a broad definition of diversity, equity, and inclusion to bar public universities from spending any money to establish a DEI office, hire DEI-associated employees, or provide DEI programming that's not required by law or for accreditation. It prohibits the universities from compelling anyone to provide a DEI statement or from giving preference to anyone based on any DEI statement, and it requires the university annually to submit a report to the General Assembly and governor affirming their compliance with the law. The bill, by way of enforcement, allows anyone to notify the Attorney General about a potential violation, and it allows the Attorney General to bring action against the campuses. Quote, Senate File 2435 makes a lot of our directives irrelevant, Barker said. There's a much broader definition of DEI in there, much stronger enforcement coming from the Attorney General's office, prohibitions of money being spent from any source on these programs. And so, my suggestion is that we begin working on compliance with that right away. Quote, I think it would be a good idea if we could be in compliance with that before the next legislative session opens. Again, it's very different than our original directives. UI President Barbara Wilson, after announcing reviews of her campuses, colleges, departments, and programs, general education courses, employee evaluations, and recruiting and hiring practices, told Barker that she disagreed the efforts to date fall short of the legislation. Quote, "I'm not a lawyer, but I think much of what we're doing is in the spirit of the law, frankly," Wilson said. "The law does acknowledge we have accreditation issues that we need to comply with, that we have federal and state laws that we need to comply with. And I think there's some recognition that it's more complicated than it looks at first blush." Quote, "So while I wish, too, that we didn't have laws in front of us and that the board directives would have been given more opportunity to unfold, I think we shouldn't jump to conclude anything about whether we're in compliance with the law," Wilson said. "My read is different than yours on that front," unquote. Barker responded by clarifying his own comments. Quote, "I don't want any of my comments to be interpreted as critical of any legislation that's come out," he said. "That's others' jobs to legislate. Ours is to comply with. I agree with President Wilson's comment that it would be great to work together to understand this legislation and comply with it. I think we could do more to work together on this than we've done over the past 5 months." Among the proactive educational pieces each campus is rolling out in response to the regent and lawmaker demands is a civic dialogue initiative in the UI residence halls aimed at encouraging students to do more listening and respectful disagreeing. Quote, "This initiative will really get students to think about how do you come to the table? How do you listen to others who are different from you? How do you find common ground? How do you stay curious instead of judgmental? How do you disagree respectfully?" Wilson said. "I think these are skills we all could use these days," unquote. The initiative, in its pilot version next fall, will work as a sort of field experiment where some residence hall floors will get the opportunity to learn these skills and some floors won't. Quote, "And we're going to measure all kinds of outcomes, including roommate disagreements and all sorts of things that we could maybe do better on," Wilson said. "I think if we can show with data that this works, then this is just the beginning," unquote. Acknowledging perhaps that the universities homed in too tightly on specific aspects of their campus's diversity, Wilson said the goal of this DEI reimagining is to acknowledge the many ways their students, staff, and faculty are diverse and support a campus that welcomes everyone. Quote, "Our goal is to find places and spaces for all students and recognize that people are really complicated," she said. "And what we want to do is say, you're all welcome," unquote. Embracing change. Former NFL player, East alum, calls for positivity on high school plans. Story written by Maria Cooper, and the dateline is Waterloo. The article begins with a photograph with the caption, "Waterloo East High graduate and former NFL player J.J. Moses speaks on Thursday during the Waterloo Schools Foundation's Sparking Academic Excellence Breakfast at the Waterloo Convention Center." And we can see the audience in soft focus in the background and J.J. Moses in the foreground holding a microphone and wearing a white linen suit. Now here's the text of the story. "A former National Football League wide receiver and Waterloo native is urging the community to embrace some big changes that may be coming. J.J. Moses on Thursday spoke at the Sparking Academic Excellence Breakfast put on by the Waterloo Schools Foundation. The annual fundraising event, which had 430 attendees, including staff and supporters, highlights what's happening in the Waterloo Community School District. Moses, a 1997 high school graduate, East High School graduate, was a wide receiver at Iowa State University and then spent 4 years in the NFL playing for the Green Bay Packers. Houston Texans, and Arizona Cardinals. After his time on the field, he assisted with the Texans' professional development team and is now a motivational speaker and author. Waterloo Superintendent Jared Smith played one of Moses' highlight reels where he weaved through University of Iowa players to score a touchdown in 2000. Smith equated this to the district's future. Quote, "You look at all the statistics for going in an upward trajectory and have serious momentum," he said, "and there is nothing but clear field ahead of us moving forward," unquote. Smith was referring to a potential new high school, which would house 10th through 12th graders from east and west in one building and on the Waterloo Career Center Central Middle School campus off of Katoski Drive. Students from Expo would relocate to the Career Center's new expansion. Smith will recommend that the Board of Education approve the project at its July 8th school board meeting. If approved, construction would start in 2025, and the school is estimated to be open by the fall of 2028. He presented three renderings to the audience of a common area, the Hall of Pride, and a collaborative learning space. The estimated $165 million building would have 50 classrooms, a performing arts center, an auditorium, and a gymnasium. Funding would come from the district's share of the 1% statewide sales tax for schools. Many members of the community have expressed uncertainty about moving to one high school, but Moses told the audience to embrace change. Quote, "It could put us on the road to greater things," he said. "I love change because I know ultimately that's what's leading us to another level, in whatever aspect that may be." Moses said he learned positivity from his fifth grade teacher, Kathy Brace, who he invited to the breakfast. She taught at the former Grant Elementary School, which has been replaced by the Dr. Walter Cunningham School for Excellence, and retired in 2013 after teaching for 24 years. Bruce called Moses Mr. Positive, something he carried into his adulthood. Quote, "She utilized her words to basically activate a gift inside of me that I did not realize I had," he said. "She helped turn dreams into reality," unquote. He said with a new high school, there will be more teachers to inspire more kids. Quote, "There's going to be a countless amount of teachers like Miss Brace that will work to motivate, to inspire, to encourage individuals to reach their dreams," unquote. The Waterloo Schools Foundation said it had raised $55,000 from the event and hopes to raise $70,000 by the end of the week. That money is then dispersed into the district for projects and initiatives. Man pleads to conspiracy in fatal robbery. Story by Jeff Reinitz. Dateline Waterloo. A Waterloo man who was granted a retrial in a fatal 2020 robbery, has pleaded guilty. Rafael Rashi Williams, 33, entered a plea to conspiracy to commit a felony, reduced from first-degree robbery, as part of an agreement with prosecutors Tuesday. The plea came after court officials began picking a jury for what would have been Williams's second trial in the August 15, 2020 garage holdup that ended with the death of 49-year-old Vincent Hemingway. Under the agreement, Rafael Williams was sentenced to up to 10 years in prison and avoided a mandatory minimum sentence before parole. Authorities said Rafael Williams and his brother, Robert Lee Williams Jr., were wearing masks and rubber gloves as part of a plan to rob a drug stash house. After approaching the house, they instead turned their attention to an Adrian Street garage where Hemingway was watching his friends work on motorcycles. Robert Lee Williams Jr. pulled out a handgun. Hemingway lunged for the weapon and was shot and killed. A jury found Rafael Williams guilty of first-degree robbery in a 2022 trial, but the Court of Appeals ordered a new trial because of an issue with jury instructions. Robert Williams Jr. was convicted of a lesser charge of voluntary manslaughter in Hemingway's death during a separate trial, and he was sentenced to 10 years in prison. He was also found guilty of attempted murder and other charges for shooting an acquaintance in the face in July 2020 and was sentenced to up to 45 years behind bars. Others arrested in the Adrian Street garage robbery include Anna Barnabas McLemore, Tamara Leonette Williams, and Tonkia Jackson. Barnabas was killed in an unrelated shooting on May 22, 2022, while out on bond. Jackson and Tamara Williams are awaiting trial, currently scheduled for May. Waterloo teen shot during argument. Dateline Waterloo. A Waterloo teen is expected to survive after he was shot during an argument on Thursday night. Details weren't immediately available, but police said the 16-year-old male suffered a gunshot wound to the arm and was taken to the University of Iowa hospitals and clinics in Iowa City for treatment. According to police, the teen's mother was given a ride to their home at the duplex at 7375 Lafayette Street around 11:35 p.m. on Thursday. The teen became involved in an argument with the mother's acquaintances. Handguns were drawn by the teen and one of the acquaintances, and gunfire followed, police said. The man who shot the teen wasn't injured, police said. No arrests have been made in the incident, and the mother's acquaintances are cooperating with investigators, authorities said. Next, Olwine man arrested for driving into traffic. Dateline Olwine. An Olwine man has been arrested after he allegedly tried to crash into other motorists. Fayette County Sheriff's deputies arrested Joshua Michael Lillibridge, 24, for four counts of assault while displaying a weapon and one count of reckless driving after he barricaded himself in his apartment at 102 8th Avenue Northwest on April 19th. Bond was set at $8,500. According to court records, witnesses called 911 around 7 p.m. about a Mitsubishi Eclipse driving erratically on Q Avenue near 10th Street. At one point, the vehicle drove head-on toward oncoming vehicles, causing the other drivers to veer onto the shoulder to avoid being hit, records state. Authorities found the vehicle parked at Lillibridge's home, and he allegedly refused to answer the door. Next, Wisconsin couple sues over 2022 crash landing. Dateline Waterloo. A Wisconsin couple is going to court over a resort-bound airplane trip that ended with a crash landing in Waterloo in 2022. Attorneys for Sharon and Kenneth Kern of Clark County, Wisconsin, filed the suit against iAero Group, Swift Air Travel, New Swift Air Holdings, Caesars Resort Collection, Harrah's Arizona Corporation, and the City of Waterloo in March in Blackhawk County District Court. The suit was moved to U.S. District Court in Cedar Rapids on Tuesday at the request of Caesars and Harrah's. According to court records, the Kearns boarded a chartered flight in Wisconsin for Caesars and Harrah's patrons headed for Laughlin, Arizona, on March 5, 2022. The plane, a Boeing 737-800 twin jet, flew to Waterloo Regional Airport to pick up more passengers, but it slid off the runway upon landing during heavy rain. According to the suit, passengers, quote, experienced sudden, unexpected, and severe forces upon their bodies, causing severe personal injuries. The couple is seeking damages to cover past and future medical expenses, pain and suffering, and loss of full mind and body. Swift Air, which operated the iAero Airways, filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy in September, according to court records. The company shut down operations in April, according to media accounts. Next, three Independence boys face assault and robbery charges. Dateline is Independence. Independence police arrested three boys ages 11, 12, and 12 on Wednesday for felony robbery in connection with the assault and robbery of another juvenile on March 23rd. The three juveniles were identified by the victim and located by officers in the vicinity, according to a news release from Lieutenant Andrew Isley of the Independence Police Department. After a thorough investigation, all three juveniles were charged Wednesday with second-degree robbery, a Class C felony, at the Buchanan County Jail and released to their parents or guardians. Two of the three boys, ages 11 and 12, earlier had been charged with fifth-degree disorderly conduct and criminal mischief for incidents earlier this year. Both engaged in fighting in public in March 2024. Both were identified as suspects in the vandalism to the Independence Public Library's Little Free Libraries that occurred in February. Both boys had been referred to juvenile court. Next, woman threatens to blow up house. Dateline Waterloo. A Waterloo woman has been arrested after she allegedly threatened to blow up a house. When officers arrived at the victim's home on Mohawk Street at around 7:30 p.m. Tuesday, they found all the burners to the stove on and a plastic spatula on the stove was on fire. The fire was extinguished and the resident was in the home's basement unharmed, police said. Ruth Ann Gee, 31, was arrested for first-degree harassment, a misdemeanor. Bond was set at $2,000. Next, gun found in underwear when man was arrested. Dateline Waterloo. Police have arrested a Waterloo man after finding a gun in his underwear. Officers arrested Alec Darnell Richardson, Jr., 19, for prohibited person in possession of a firearm, violation of a no-contact order, carrying weapons, interference while armed, and possession of marijuana. Bond was set at $21,000. Police were sent to an alarm at Richardson's mother's home on Summit Avenue around 8:40 p.m. Tuesday. Officers found Richardson in the area, and he took off on foot, according to court records. When authorities threatened to use a taser on Richardson, he stopped, and they found a 9mm Springfield Arms handgun in his underwear, records state. Officers said Richardson has a restraining order prohibiting him from going to his mother's home. The order stems from a March 18th incident where he allegedly argued with his mother, assaulted her, and pointed a gun at her, records state. Turning the page now, Cedar Falls Science Bowl team wins Iowa Regional for the second year and heads to Nationals. Andy Malone wrote the story, which has a dateline of Cedar Falls. A quartet of Holmes Junior High and Hanson Elementary alumni banded together at Cedar Falls High School this year, using their knowledge and buzzers to achieve Science Bowl glory. Cedric Liu, Param Sampat, Pranav Kota, and James Peng brought their expertise and fist bumps to the fast-thinking head-to-head questions competition and earned another first-place finish at the Iowa Regional Competition on February 3rd in Ames. Here we have a photograph of the five contestants, and the caption says, "The Cedar Falls High School Science Ball Team." They're all standing in a row, arms on each other's shoulders, and the young man at the center, wearing a red shirt, is holding the trophy they won. The group is now in Washington, D.C., getting ready to compete Sunday and potentially Monday at the national tournament as they represent the state and look to take down several dozen teams. They're hoping to avenge a disappointing defeat in the first round at Nationals last year, albeit against a defending dynasty team successful year after year. Quote, "It's a lot of team chemistry and a lot of energy," said Sampat, about keys to their own success. Quote, "Every time one of us would get a question right, we fist bump each other," unquote. Senior Sean Wangman has been practicing and is ready as an alternate, while their science teacher, Aaron Slowinski, serves as team advisor. Kota and Sampat, the team captain, were returning as seniors after last year's first place finish, which was particularly impressive because it was the first time the high school had ever assembled a team. The remaining two spots on the roster were made available after the graduations of Akshat Mehta and Anurag Anagu, and were filled by Liu, a junior, and Peng, a sophomore, after tryouts. Quote, other teams may work well together, but if we get something wrong, we support each other and keep our heads up, said Peng. A lot of teams start to lose a lot of momentum as they get questions wrong, added Liu. At the Iowa Regional Competition, they felt they went in with high expectations and still managed to reign victorious among the 22 teams. The Iowa Regional Competition included round-robin and double elimination sections, quick and accurate responses to multiple-choice and open-ended toss-up questions, earned teams exclusive access to more time for bonus questions, and possibly more points to their totals. In preparing, they went over questions from the last two decades of competition and studied on their own. Naturally, team members also relied on their existing knowledge gleaned from sources like books, YouTube videos, and documentaries. In particular, they shocked one team during the competition with knowledge about carbon nanotubes. Quote, we each have our own specialty, said Liu. Peng is the earth science and chemistry expert. Sampat is also a chemistry and biology savant with knowledge on space and energy. Liu comes with his math and physics depth, but Kota is the jack of all trades. Quote, after practice, we'll see what we got wrong, and on our own, we'll go through them and work on that, said Sampat. When we're practicing together, we're working as a group and pretending it's a competition. So we have that type of atmosphere and spirit, said Peng. It was particularly fulfilling when the team defeated Pleasant Valley High School in the grand finals this year after having already suffered a loss to the school. Cedar Falls took down West Des Moines, Iowa City Liberty, Ames, and Pleasant Valley High Schools in that order. Pleasant Valley beat us 98-16 during double elimination, and it's not looking great, but because of the energy we keep and how positive we are, we managed to rally back even after getting destroyed and won the final match, said Sampat. Irish Fest unveils barrel whiskey for August event. Maria Cooper wrote this story, and it begins with a color photograph of festival goers as they weave through the vendors on 4th Street during the 2023 Iowa Irish Fest in downtown Waterloo. Our dateline here is Waterloo. Iowa Irish Fest will celebrate its 18th birthday in August, and organizers made their first big announcement of the year on Wednesday. The festival's committee unveiled the hand-picked barrel whiskey that will be available at the event, which runs August 2nd and through the 4th. Chad Shipman, director of Irish Fest, has wanted to have a barrel pick for years, and now the dream has become a reality. The liquor from Keeper's Heart Whiskey, based in Minneapolis, is a blend of both Irish and American whiskeys. Rory Dolan, new president of the Cedar Valley Irish Cultural Association, which organizes the event, is proud of how far the festival has come. Quote, in the Cedar Valley, in the state of Iowa, we have created something that is just unheard of, he said. From a back alley with a couple guys getting together to what we've done, it's amazing, unquote. Dolan assumed the role as president after co-founder Jim Walsh died in October. The two were great friends, and he hopes to keep the spirit alive in the first Irish Fest since Walsh's death. Quote, let's not let Jim's dream of the Irish Fest or the overwhelming love of people, let's not let it die, he said. Let's honor him by keeping the vision of fostering community spirit and the vibrant essence of his beloved Cedar Valley. Last year, 37,000 people visited the festival that spans 12 blocks in downtown Waterloo. The event is intended to foster fellowship and community outreach through Irish cultural events and programs. It is presented by the Viridian Credit Union. Shipman also unveiled that Hy-Vee will be a new premier partner. The event brought $1.4 million of economic impact to downtown last year. Although Irish Fest takes place in Waterloo, Cedar Falls Mayor Danny Laudick said he is excited for his city to become more involved. Quote, "These types of events are one of those anchor things that bring this community together," he said. Three Celtic bands will headline the stages. Cynthian plays Friday night, Enter the Haggis on Saturday, and the High Kings on Sunday. A plethora of other musical acts and other entertainment will perform across seven stages. The event also has a family fun and learning area, Irish cultural area, Shamrock and Run, a bicycle rally, workshops on Irish dance, music, language, and culture, whiskey tasting, rugby tournament, motorcycle ride, Catholic Mass, Celtic vendors, and food and drink vendors. And now, listeners, we take a moment to remind you that you're listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Monday, April 29th, on IRIS, that's I-R-I-S, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and the Print Handicapped. Now, let's listen to this message.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
And now, we turn to the obituaries page. In Cedar Falls, Claire S. Bruce, 97, died on Tuesday, April 23, 2024, at the Cedar Valley Hospice Home. He was born on November 26, 1926, in Waterloo, Iowa, the son of James and Ellen Hanson Bruce. After the death of both of his parents in 1933, Claire and his brother Doug made their home with Anders and Ingenborg Iverson in Cedar Falls. Claire graduated from Cedar Falls High School and then joined the Army in 1945, honorably discharged in 1946. On April 30, 1949, he was united in marriage to Marilyn Kelly at St. Patrick Catholic Church in Cedar Falls. He was employed with the plant services at UNI, retiring in 1988. Claire was a member of St. Patrick Catholic Church. He was also a lifetime member of the Cedar Falls AMVETS Post 49 and served as post commander from 1982 to 1983. He was proud to be a part of the Honor Guard, helping with many military funerals, and was honored to join the Honor Flight to Washington, D.C. in 2010. Claire especially loved all his visits and time spent with his family. He and Marilyn spent part of their married lives caring for older family members. He also enjoyed golfing and watching any sports. There will be a funeral mass for Claire at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, April 30th, at St. Patrick Catholic Church in Cedar Falls. Visitation will be from 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. on Monday, April 29th, at Richardson Funeral Service in Cedar Falls, and 1 hour prior to the service at the church. A private family burial will be held at a later date. Memorials may be directed to St. Patrick Catholic Church, Cedar Falls AMVETS Post 49, or Cedar Valley Hospice. Online condolences may be left at www.richardsonfuneralservice.com. Next is Marlene A. Gerdes Bopp, 84, of Columbia, Missouri, and she was called to join her husband in eternity on April 23, 2024. Marlene was born May 24, 1939, to Charles and Audrey Crabtree Gerdes in Waterloo, Iowa. As she entered high school, she attended Prairie Bible Institute in Three Hills, Alberta, Canada, returning her senior year to graduate from Cedar Falls High School in 1957. After graduation, she attended Moody Bible Institute, majoring in Christian education. She returned to Waterloo after the death of her father to help her mother with the day-to-day operations of Flowers by Audrey. Marlene married Dr. Kenneth Bopp on June 12, 1965, at Walnut Street Baptist Church in Waterloo. Along the journey with Ken, they moved to St. Louis, Jefferson City, Kansas City, and finally Columbia, where she resided for 48 years. Her focus was always family and her local church. A visitation for Marlene will be held on April 28th from 2 to 4 at Lock on Fourth in Waterloo. Graveside services at Mount Vernon Township Cemetery on April 29th at 10 a.m. In lieu of flowers, memorial gifts may be given to Coyote Hill Foster Care Services at coyotehill.org or NWA Extra Mile in care of Ed Phillips at freedom51.com. Next is Rhonda K. Cole, 65, who passed away Tuesday, April 23rd at Birdie College after a lengthy journey with Alzheimer's disease. Rhonda was born October 11, 1958, to Richard and Rosemary Federspiel Shares. She was one of six children. She was raised in Gilbertville, Iowa, and attended Don Bosco Catholic School. She married Curtis Werning in 1979, and they had a daughter, Nikki. They later divorced. She married Robert Cole in 1990, and that union brought a son, Clint. She worked at Steamboat Gardens for over 30 years and later worked at LJ's and Screaming Eagle. She was, hands down, the best server. She knew everyone and could always remember a name and a usual order. She doted on her children and watched them grow up. Everyone became family. She will always be remembered for her smile and bubbly personality. Rhonda enjoyed vacations, the New Orleans Saints, traveling with her son's hockey team, the Waterloo Blackhawks, especially Tommy Hawk, spending time with her family and friends, having fun with her grandkids, her daughter's dog, Gus, and getting to meet her great-granddaughter. Rhonda was diagnosed with Alzheimer's in 2017 when she was just 58 years old. Alzheimer's is an absolute thief, but it never stopped Rhonda from living the best life she could. She moved to Birdie Cottage in 2022, and they provided her with the best possible life every day, right to the end of her story. Rhonda loved everyone she met, and in return was loved by so many. Everyone is invited to join in her celebration of life. Visitation will be held Monday, April 29th, from 12 to 3 p.m. at Haggerty Wyckoff Grarup Funeral Service on West Ridgeway Avenue. There will be a gathering following at Screaming Eagle Bar and Grill, beginning at 4 p.m., exactly where she would want friends to spend time sharing and remembering her. Special thanks to her family at Birdie College, St. Croix Hospice, and her Wednesday night besties. Memorials may be directed to her family at P.O. Box 431, Raymond, Iowa, 50667. And you may leave an online condolence at www.haggertywaychoffgrarup.com. Next, in Cedar Falls, Marvin, known as Marv W. Hess, 95 of Cedar Falls, passed away on Wednesday, April 24th, at Unity Point Health Allen Hospital in Waterloo. Marv was born in Shell Rock, Iowa, on July 14, 1928, the son of Harold and Vera Henley Hess. He graduated from Cedar Falls High School with the class of 1945. Marv was drafted to the United States Army and served during the Korean War. He was honorably discharged in 1952, at which time he served as a platoon sergeant, radio team chief, and commander of the Army Color and Honor Guard. On June 25, 1955, Marv married Sharon Benson in Cedar Falls. They were later divorced. Marv was employed in the auto repair business and management during his early years. He retired in 1990 after 25 years with State Farm as a claims specialist, claims trainer, and storm supervisor. Marv was a lifetime member of the Cedar Falls AmVets Post 49 and Nazareth Lutheran Church. There will be a visitation for Marv, which will be held on Sunday, April 28th, at Dahl Van Hoof Schuf Funeral Home from 5 to 7 p.m., continuing the following day from 10 to 11 a.m. at the funeral home. Funeral service will begin at 11 a.m., followed by a reception and graveside service at Greenwood Cemetery in Cedar Falls at 1 p.m., with military honors by the U.S. Army Honor Guard and Cedar Falls AmVets Post 49. Memorial contributions may be directed to the Cedar Falls AmVets Post 49. Please visit www.dahlfuneralhome.com to share condolences with the family. Now we have two death notices to read. Robert, known as Bob, James Brown, 93, of Janesville, went home to be with the Lord on Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. Locke at Tower Park is handling arrangements for the family, and their phone number is area code 319-233-3146. And in Allison, Eugene A. Mayfield, 97, of Allison, passed away Wednesday, April 24th, at the Rehabilitation Center of Allison. Visitation will be held from 2 o'clock p.m. until 4 o'clock p.m. on Sunday, April 28th, at Trinity Reformed Church in Allison. Funeral services for Eugene will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Monday, April 29th, at Trinity Reformed Church in Allison. Eugene will be laid to rest at the Allison Cemetery. Arrangements are being made with Woodley Funeral Home. That was the end of the obituaries, and now we turn back to local news from the Courier. Waterloo man collects $250,000 lottery prize. Dateline Clive. A Waterloo man has won a $250,000 lottery prize. Dale Burge won the fourth top prize in the Iowa Lottery's Payline Scratch Game. He purchased his winning ticket at Metromark at 2332 Falls Avenue in Waterloo and claimed his prize Tuesday at the lottery's Cedar Rapids regional office. Payline is a $20 scratch game that features eight top prizes of $25,000 and overall odds of 1 in 2.4. For more information about this game and the number of prizes still available, visit iowalottery.com. Now here's the Metro Briefs column. Art Share now showcasing high school artists at Viridian Credit Union branches. Story written by Courier staff. Dateline Waterloo. New collections of local student art are now on display in select Viridian Credit Union branches across Iowa, including Waterloo and Waverly. Art Share is a partnership between Viridian and 11 Iowa high schools to publicly display approximately 125 pieces of student art each year in five Viridian branches across the state. Each piece is professionally framed or enclosed for display in a branch for 1 year. Each collection is borrowed from local high school art classes and is also available online at viridiancu.org/artshare. Quote, Viridian created ArtShare more than 20 years ago in partnership with local schools to display students' art in our branches, said Julie Gage, Viridian's public relations strategist. Quote, we're grateful for the chance to display these pieces and hope each collection expands the students' audience and local appreciation for their talent, unquote. The Ansborough Avenue branch and their partnering schools are Cedar Falls High School and Valley Lutheran School, both in Cedar Falls, and West High School, East High School, and Columbus Catholic High School in Waterloo. The Waverly Branch is featuring artwork from students at Waverly Shellrock High School. Affordable housing presentation set, Dateline Waterloo. The public is invited to join the Waterloo Community Foundation at 11 a.m. on Wednesday for a presentation. Allie Parrish, Executive Director of Iowa Heartland Habitat for Humanity, and Lakeisha Veasley, Director of Waterloo Housing Authority, will speak about the current state of affordable housing in Waterloo. Community members may join the free online presentation by visiting wlucommunityfoundation.org/learning-opportunities or by contacting Paige Price at paige.price@wlucommunityfoundation.org. June 2 ceremony honors graduates. Dateline Waterloo. The Cedar Valley Faces of Excellence will host its 8th community-wide baccalaureate ceremony for high school and college graduates at 4 p.m. June 2nd at Antioch Baptist Church, 426 Sumner Street. African American high school and college students from the Cedar Valley area who graduated between August 2023 and May of 2024 are encouraged to participate. The registration deadline is May 10th. A required lunch rehearsal will take place from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. on June 1st at the church. CVFE's mission is to recognize our students' accomplishments. For more information, call Marion Tyson at area code 319-291-7698. Next, Waverly Art Walk set for May 4th. Waverly. Art Walk returns May 4th to Waverly's Coleman Park for the 19th year. The free event is from 10 a.m. to 4 o'clock p.m. The Juried Fine Arts Show will feature 37 artists from throughout the region, including 9 new artists displaying and selling their work. Media will range from paintings, ceramics, fibers, and glassware to jewelry, sculptures, and more. There will be music, kids' activities, and food vendors. Kids will paint a piano, which will remain in Coleman Park for the summer. There also will be an interactive coloring mural for kids featuring well-known landmarks from around the community. Waverly Shellrock School's robotics team will volunteer at the kids' booth, and the Waverly Rotary Club is hosting a Lego build station. Wartburg College's Waldemar A. Schmidt Art Gallery will offer sticker and card making. In addition, the Waverly Public Library Bookmobile will make an appearance, and the Wartburg Community Symphony will have their instrument petting zoo. Paul Imholt of St. Cloud, Minnesota, known as the Musical String Man, will provide strolling musical entertainment on a number of string instruments, including the dulcimer. Art Walk is co-sponsored by Waverly Leisure Services and the Waverly Chamber of Commerce. For more information, visit www.waverlychamber.com or search Waverly Art Walk on Facebook. Judge rules in favor of Cedar Falls on dangerous dog declaration. Story written by Andy Malone. Dateline Cedar Falls. A judge has ruled the city of Cedar Falls acted properly in determining an allegedly dangerous dog should be euthanized after 5 bite incidents. On Tuesday, District Court Judge Joel Dalrymple annulled the appeal by the attorney for Leanne and Chris Western, owners of the American Bully named Reese. Dalrymple felt evidence was adequate and no due process violations existed. However, the attorney, Jamie Hunter, immediately filed a motion to reconsider and was denied, which was denied on Friday. The ruling is the second failed appeal in the fight to keep the beloved pet alive. Police Chief Mark Howard originally authorized putting the dog down last year, as allowed under city code. The 5 bite incidents reportedly happened between May 2021 and October 2023 at the Western's home on 18th Street, and at a relative's home on Clark Drive. The Westerns lost an appeal on November 15th to the Cedar Falls City Council. The proceedings questioned in this second appeal. Waterloo demonstration to protest immigration law. Story written by Courier staff, and the dateline is Waterloo. There will be a demonstration on May 1st to protest a new Iowa immigration law. Governor Kim Reynolds recently signed a law making it illegal to be in Iowa in violation of federal immigration laws. The event will be held at 7 p.m. in the parking lot behind Queen of Peace Catholic Church at 320 Mulberry Street. Participants will march a block east to Lincoln Park, where there will be a short program and prayer service. The Reverend Nils Jesus Hernandez, pastor of Queen of Peace and director of the parish's Hispanic ministry, said the main purpose of the demonstration is to raise awareness about the adverse impact the new law will have on the immigrant community and to assure immigrants that they are welcome and appreciated in Iowa. He invited local residents who share concerns about the new law to join in the march and demonstration. Quote, "Our immigrant people are left alone and are disturbed by this new law," he told the Waterloo City Council on April 15th. He urged the council to make a statement of support, quote, "so that we immigrant citizens can trust our civil leaders again," unquote. Hernandez, who was born in Nicaragua, has been a citizen of the U.S. since 2001. He warned the council that the local economy will be impacted if immigrant workers do not feel welcome and their presence is criminalized. The legislation takes effect on July 1st, unless it is blocked by a court order. The Iowa law is similar to one passed in Texas last year, which was challenged in court on the grounds that states do not have the jurisdiction over federal immigration law. The law makes it an aggravated misdemeanor for a person who has been previously denied admission or deported from the United States to return to Iowa. It requires a judge, after a finding of probable cause for an arrest under the law, to order a person to be released and deported to their country of origin. It also makes violating an order to leave the U.S. a Class C felony. Now, here is a guest editorial which appeared in today's paper. Common Sense Border Control. Quote, "No great nation can be in a position where they can't control their borders, not just for immigration, but for drugs, terror, a whole range of other things," then Senator Joe Biden in 2007. "I've previously expressed support for the Republican rejection of the recent border legislation. The final bill simply wasn't, quote, as advertised. Rather than controlling the border, the draft legislation had little to do with stopping human traffic. It was very much a clerical exercise to better keep track of those illegally entering the U.S. The proposed legislation tolerated continued high levels of illegal immigration as long as it didn't exceed a 7-consecutive-day average of 5,000 encounters, or a single day of 8,500. Recall that the recent 7,000 average of daily encounters has been considered out of control. We can be sure the cartels would keep the illegal traffic within these constraints. They can't afford to lose the financial windfall from human and drug trafficking. And without a barrier, illegal immigrants could continue to choose to cross anywhere along the unfenced, uncontrolled open border. What elements are required in a border bill that will enhance national security, facilitate smart immigration policies, and provide order for our vulnerable southern border? The keystone will be a barrier wall, holding the system together and making it possible to enforce laws and carry out security and immigration policies. President Trump had the right idea. It involved applying simple common sense, a barrier wall for slowing things down and sorting things out, enhanced by high tech and human surveillance. Democrats had previously supported similar border policies, but changed their minds when Trump made border control his central campaign promise. Trump chose a stop-and-sort method rather than Biden's whoops-better-chase approach. Biden immediately discontinued construction of the wall, handing control of the border crossing to the cartels and essentially putting up welcome signs for the world's criminals. Federal subsidies for illegal immigrants were provided just in case the initial invitation wasn't received. A wall is not a medieval concept whose time has passed. Contrary to some border opponents' opinions, a border barrier isn't telling people to keep out. Rather, it advises them simply to find the door. The late Charles Cruthammer explained it like this, quote, "When you have a barrier to keep people in, it's a prison. When it's intended to keep people out, that's an expression of sovereignty," unquote. Some opponents predict that a wall would be breached by large groups with long ladders charging the wall, reenacting the storming of the Bastille. That's nonsense. The wall will discourage undesirable illegal arrivals and facilitate order and a process for those who wish to comply with our immigration laws. This is accomplished by strategic use of human and technology resources in addition to the barrier. Here's a note about the author. His name is Steve Bakey, and he is a Courier subscriber living in Fort Myers, Florida. He is a retired CPA and commercial finance executive. And now, friends, that's going to do it for today's reading of the Waterloo-Cedar Falls Courier for Monday, April 29th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Remember, you can listen to a recording of this reading of the Courier or of the other newspapers around the state that we read. Just visit our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And we want to thank you for listening to your IRIS, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.